So we're going to have a go. We're going to have a go. And we're going to do our first little experiment. And in order that this shall be done with effect and properly, it's essential you don't look at Douglas. You look at what I'm asking you to look at, and I'm asking you to look at your spectacles if you have any. And if you don't have any, we make up a pair like I'm doing. And those of you who have spectacles, will you take them off and hold them like that at arm's length? And those of you who don't have spectacles, make up a pair like Douglas is doing. Will you please do that? Please look now at those two apertures. Look at those two apertures out there. Two. Now slowly put them on. Slowly put them on. And when you've got them on, drop your hands. Now what are you looking out of? Are you looking out of two holes? Two eyes? You know, there's a thing in the East called the third eye. Do we have to go to Lhasa or Varanasi or, God help us, Mexico to discover our third eye? Is it not available this evening in Melbourne? Did we ever look out of anything else but this huge window? There was a teacher who said, if you will find, what you need, he called it something like the kingdom, when your eye is single, and then your whole body shall be full of light. Do we ever look out of anything but this single eye? And does it have a frame? Is it not infinite, the extent, the single eye we're looking out of now? And could we do another, complete this little experiment by looking up at the ceiling, not at me, and outlining, as I'm doing, just outlining the window you're looking out of, without smiting your neighbor, just where your hands disappear. So could you do that? Just outlining your single eye. Did you ever look out of anything but that? And does it have a frame? Isn't it infinite in extent? This is a way home, you know. Any road home is a good road. Any ticket home is a valid ticket. What are you looking out of now but what Shakespeare called your glassy essence? The only thing is, the window has no glass and no frame, does it? Are you not just that window? And you know, that window will never be broken. There's nothing there to break. Did you ever look out of anything but this? Whose eye is that? The little guy in the mirror apparently looking out of two little holes. That one is perishing. The one who's looking out of this great window without a frame. Is anything to perish there? I suggest to you that glass is unbreakable. Because it doesn't exist. There's no frame. What are you looking out of? And you can see now, perhaps, as you look out of this space for the world to happen in, you will see that you are connecting up with your childhood when you were exactly like this, looking out of this space. And you will see how, I suggest, you are not confronting me at this time, the Douglas here, you are putting nothing in his way. You're busted wide open for Douglas, as Douglas is for you. Now, in the as if world, the conventional world, we are built for suspicion, I would say, for every conceivable kind of personal mishap and trouble and lack of communication and giving love a terrible, terrible hard time. You know, what is the essence of loving but to be to disappear in favor of the loved one? Every one of us knows that. You know, it may seem rather sentimental, but I think it's really true that in the as-is world, the given world, the true world, the world as it is, not the conventional world, but the world as is, that we die for one another. Now, you see, when I look at, in imagination, look at Douglas from there he is. You know, I imagine, Douglas, that you see him, or I take that guy in the mirror and shove him here, then Douglas is not, you know, there he is, dying but not yet dead. On the way out, but still around. But when I come up here in my attention, it's like an arrow or bullet which comes here and is nothing left. Nothing left by the time the arrow gets to here, but nothing left except awareness. And I say, it's not because I'm a nice chap, because Douglas is not a very nice chap, but because we are built, I would say, to give our lives to one another, to disappear in each other's favor. And you say, well, this is not real death, Douglas. No, I think it is more real than the conventional death, because, you know, an undertaker, or what do you call him, a mortician in Australia? Anyway, an undertaker has to deal with some, when Douglas dies, has to deal with some mess, some goo. But there's no goo left when you come home to who you are. It's a real dying. And you know, there's a teacher who said, greater love hath no man than this, that he give his life for his friend. I say we are built to that wonderful pattern. And if we live from that pattern, we give love a chance, more than a chance. We are living in a world which I would say is rich with blessing, rich with blessing. I mean, we have come to the place where death cannot enter. Death cannot enter. You know, tomorrow we shall be doing experiments about this, but just let me mention this. I look in the mirror and I see Douglas, who is 82 years old. He's dying. And I bring the mirror up here. We shall be doing it tomorrow. Bring the mirror up here. And long before it gets here, it's all gone. Death is there. And I bring up the mirror and the face disappears as I bring it up. It goes all blurry. And here it cannot come. It cannot come. So there was a poet whom you will remember who asked in a rhetorical question, O death, where is thy sting, O grave? Where is thy victory? And I say, there, it can't come here. It can't come here, because here one is busted wide open into this wonderful space which Shakespeare speaks of, this transparency. Another little experiment. Pointing. We have a very good instrument here for bringing us home to the place we never left. You know, our mums and dads, I expect in Australia as in England, told us it was rude to point at people. Did your mum tell you that? Very rude. She's very rude. You embarrass people by pointing at them. Well, there's one place where the inhabitant loves being pointed at. Who you really, 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 really are loves being pointed at. Absolutely adores it. And we're going to point at who we really, really, really are and see what we're pointing at. And this is the most neglected place in the whole universe. I mean, I think this place we're going to point at is more neglected than the moons around Venus and the black holes and the galaxies. This place really is incredibly neglected, and it's astounding that we neglect it, seeing that it is the very plumb center of our life, and we're going to point to that. But let's begin by pointing at something else. And if you would kindly, in doing this experiment, don't point, don't look at Douglas pointing, look at your finger and what your finger's pointing at. Yes. So would you kindly point to the ceiling? And you will see that your finger is pointing at something. And now bring your finger down and point at a wall, and you will find that your finger is pointing at something again, at a wall. So finger, space, wall. Now bring your finger down further, and I have to ask you to do this. Will you point at Douglas, and I'll point at you. Now you're pointing at a thing here called Douglas. And there's finger, Douglas. Now, bring your finger down and point, if you can, at the floor, just at your feet. So you have your finger and space and the floor. Now point to what you can see of your legs, which may not be very much. Your lap, perhaps. So you've got finger and you've got space and you've got a lap. Thing, space, thing. Now point to your tummy. Finger, space, tummy. Don't look at me, look at your finger, at what it's pointing at, which is your tummy. Now bring your finger up and point to your chest. Still, it's pointing at something. Now bring your finger further up and point to what's above your chest. What is your finger pointing at now? Point at what you're looking out of now. What is your finger pointing at? You're the authority. I think you have never pointed at this place. You have never, most of us have never, never, never pointed at this place. Isn't it extraordinary that we never pointed at this place? Is it not pointing at space for the world to happen in? Is it not pointing at this vast window without a frame and the view out of the window, full of all those people in the room and so on? But please, before you put your finger down, have a really good point at what lies at the center of your world. You can bring your finger down now. Isn't this the most neglected place in the whole universe? And isn't it essential to get that right and be our own authority? Of where we're coming from, who we really, really, really are. And I suggest that you are infinite space, imperishable transparency, infinite space for all those perishable things to come and go in. And that you are exactly the opposite of what you look like to me. You look solid. I think you will have seen that you are transparent. You look two-eyed, and I think you will have seen that you are single-eyed. You look small, very, very tiny, and I think you will see that you have no boundaries. I think that in every respect you are the opposite of what you have been told. And when you took everybody's word for what you were like, but your own word, you had got everything, as I had, upside down. And you had rejected, along with me, a world full of blessing, in which love has a chance, where we're built for loving, and built not for dying, but for being who we really, really are through all eternity. I've got one more experiment to do. And then I'm going to suggest how we use this, how practical this is, how we live from this, what we do with it when we go away from here. One more experiment. And this experiment answers question which has been in your minds, I'm sure, many of your minds. You say, well, Douglas, this is terribly visual, you know, and how would you show this to a blind man? And if it's only accessible to vision, it can't be very profound. So I'm sure you must have felt like that. So our last experiment this evening is to check up whether this is available to other senses than vision. But again, you're the authority. Again, don't believe a thing Douglas says. I shall ask questions. You must supply your own answers, silently, of course. And for the purpose of this experiment, please, may we all shut our eyes and keep them shut. Now, exercising our own authority, daring to be who we are and go by present evidence, on present evidence. What shape are you? Do you have any shape now? Do you have any boundaries now? On present evidence, how tall are you? How many toes do you have? Couldn't you be any shape now? You know, when we were very little, we played a game, didn't we, of being an aeroplane, a train, a lion. Why were we so good at being any shape we fancied? Surely because, in fact, we are without shape in our own first-hand experience. Do you have any limits? Do you have any boundaries? Is there any interface between you and the environment? Any place where you stop and the world begins? On present evidence, isn't it more perhaps as if you were, why this vast, vast space? The window at night, perhaps, still without a frame, still without any boundaries. Are you not capacity? Endless capacity on present evidence? You could call this capacity, if you wished, silence. Are you not now silence, for these sounds to come and go in capacity, stroke, silence, endless, boundless, imperishable. Certainly the sounds perish. Does the silence perish? Certainly the capacity contains all sorts of sensations at this time. The warmth, pressure, tickles, tastes, aches, pains, and so on. All probably, I suggest, coming and going in your capacity. Are you not now a still capacity room for these perishable things to come and go in, call sensation? And equally, thoughts arising, briefly flourishing and disappearing. Feelings coming up again, for a time, flourishing and dying back into this awake, boundless, imperishable capacity. Aren't you that now? You're the authority. Dare now to be yourself. On present evidence, how old are you? What is your nationality? What is your sex? On present evidence, with closed eyes, dropping memory, imagination, going by what is given at this very, very moment. What is your color? Not to mention your job and name, address, telephone number, all that stuff. All that enormously complicated self-image you had built up over the years. Rightly built up. Life is about building up that self-image. But what's happened to it now? Is it available now? Can you find it? Isn't that all stuff belonging to the past, not given now, on present evidence? Who are you now? Who are you now? What are you now? Are you able to say what you are now, on present evidence? What remains of all the stuff that you and I had built up, this enormously complicated picture of our personality, our humanness? What's happened to it? So what are you able to say now about yourself? On present evidence, can you say, I'm this, I'm that, or I'm the other? I suggest, I don't know, but it's only a suggestion. I suggest that if you're really going by present evidence, you are unable to say, I'm this, or I'm that, or I'm the other. But are you destroyed now? Are you unable to say, I am? Wait a minute, what a name to have. I am. Whose name is that? You know, the great religions have all said that nearer to you than all else, more really, really you than all else, is the one whose name is indeed I Am. And to recognize this is not pride, it is humility. Otherwise, we claim being for Douglas. I say Douglas is. Douglas is, Mary is, Chris is, Carol is. I say that pride, real humility, to say the one who is, and insofar as I am that one who is, the name of that one at this moment is I Am. And that's quite a name to have. You're the authority. Are you comfortable with having lost all that stuff that you had built up and I'd built up, that self-image? Are you comfortable with this, or are you angry? Do you feel a sense of loss? Do you feel a sense of coming to a strange foreign country? Or, on the contrary, do you feel a great relief? A relief of homecoming. Who are you now in your own experience as first person singular, present tense? I suggest you're the one who is absolutely imperishable. The one who is love itself. The one who gives her or his life for his friend. Not because you're a religious person or spiritual person. Psychologically, what shall I say? Acute, developed, or some spiritual master or other, but because you're simple enough, humble enough, to be infinitely great. On present evidence, who are you now? And when we open our eye, I think all that happens surely is that the decorations of our home become more exciting, more colorful, but one's name remains. That extraordinary name, the name we shall never lose. Well, that is the conclusion of our little experiments. We're going to do a whole lot more tomorrow and the day after. But any of you, many of you will not come for one reason or another, not able to come tomorrow or Sunday. And I promise you, you won't have lost anything. We've spilled the beans. Douglas has spilled the beans tonight. Certainly tomorrow we shall be going a lot further into the implications and applications of what we discovered tonight. But anyone who is not coming after this has still really experienced with us hear what the whole thing is about. Any road home is a good road. For the rest of the evening until half past nine, I wanted to say something about the practicality of this. What use is it? You know, does it help in our lives? What's the good of it? You know, apart from, what shall I say, the entertainment, the fun, the relief of her coming home and all that, how did it help us actually to function better in our lives? Well, I don't know about you, but I do think that living from the truth of who we are has got to work better than living from a bunch of lies, hasn't it? It's got to work better. Living from the truth of who we are has got to be more practical in every which way. And let me just indicate a few of the ways which I think you would find your life working out better if you lived consciously from what we've seen tonight. If you practiced it, what would happen? Because we do have to practice it. You know, just coming home once, this evening, it's very good, but you know, it's not going to change our habits. It's not going to change our lives until we keep coming home and keep coming home to the place we never left, until it is natural to be natural and live in the as-is world, being who we are, and have less respect for the as-if world, which we still have to live in. Well, let me just give you one or two things I've noticed about my own life that I haven't mentioned yet, and I would suggest that you try these things out in your own life and see whether they work for you. And the first thing is about energy. Energy. You know, when I was talking about that little guy in the mirror there, that little friend we had when we were little children, little friend, and when we grew up, he escaped, or she escaped from the glass tank and came up here and parasitized me here. And you also parasitized by the thing which really belongs there. Well, what happens? Well, parasites drain our energy and they kill us. And I say, if we want energy, we have to be truthful about who we are. Put it another way, it takes an enormous amount of energy. It's incredibly tiring to keep hallucinating a meatball here for keeping people out with. It takes an enormous amount of energy. And not only do I have to build this hallucination here, but I have to keep adjusting it for you and you and you. I have to keep changing it all the time. It's incredibly tiring, isn't it? It really is. Let's live from the truth, and I would say that we're likely to have more energy. Hallucination is tiring. And when it's hallucination of something right at the center of my world, it's desperately tiring. So if we want the energy, I'd say let us try living from who we really, 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 really are, instead of from who they say we are, they tell us we are. Live from Shakespeare's glassy essence, the transparency, the window without a frame, the imperishable I am. Live from that, and I suggest you have a lot more energy. Well, you know, I shouldn't talk about this, but in Australia, my friends at work, Doug, is pretty hard, I can tell you. And I mean, at 82, you see, I really need this. I really do. I mean, otherwise I should be carried out of here on the stretcher, or brought in on the stretcher. I really, really mean this. If we wanted some energy, let's tell the truth of who we really, 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 really are. Our true nature is energizing. And it's for you to test this. I suggest it's obviously going to be true if we live from who we really, really are. Of course, the joke is, there's a fantastic joke here. We are all living from who we are. Everyone in this room is doing it right. It's just that we didn't notice we were doing it right. I mean, nobody could live from that meatball. in the dark, sticky, wet interstices of that decaying thing. Nobody believes that anyway, not even in a loony bin. We're all living from who we really, really, really are, we not? We're all living from this. The only thing is we'd got intimidated in saying, I am what I am here, what I look like to those guys over there. What we have to do is have the guts to say, mind your own business. I'm going to be who I am. You look after my appearance, I look after my reality. It's simple, isn't it? We're all doing it right. We're all living from who we are. That is really, really energizing to do that. But I come back to this business of loving. You know, our lives are about personal relationships, are they not? I mean, all of us really have this opportunity and this problem. How are we going to relate to the people we love and the people we don't love quite so much as we should? How are we going to relate to them? I say, let's give love a chance by telling the truth. We are busted wide open for each other, aren't we? Glasnost. We are absolutely busted wide open for one another. All we've got to do is look and see that. And when we live from that, we give love a chance. We give love a chance. And we're all living from that. It's not a case of changing anything. You see, there are two, we all agree that something's gone wrong. And there are two things we can do, and that is change ourselves and pull up our socks and have all sorts of therapy and treatment of one kind or another, you know, so that we can live better lives. Well, you try that one. Try that one. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about improving ourselves. I'm talking about accepting ourselves as we really, really, really are. Telling the truth about how we're living anyway. And I say we find that we are built, busted wide open for one another. We are built for loving. And you go home from here and you look at your dear one and you've got a straight option. Shall you lie and make it confrontation? Or shall you tell the truth and tell it like it is, which is being busted wide open? Chris, I'm going to ask Chris to come up here. Chris. My dear friend Chris is responsible for Douglas being here. Now, you see, if you look at Chris and me as we look at one another, from your point of view, Chris and I are confronting one another, aren't we? There's a meatball there. Yeah. There's a young meatball there, well, a fresh meatball there, and a stale one there. And there's about 3 feet between them, and we're confronting them. I haven't rehearsed this with Chris, but Chris, is it like that for you?
I have to say it's not, Douglas. After about 4 weeks ago, it'll never be the same again. And I find it the most remarkable thing that what I really looking at as Douglas, and what I seem to be looking out of is just the space for Douglas. And that, for me, is an extraordinary change in my being. It's most wonderful, really.
And I think we could say that we're trading faces.
I'm certainly full of your face. Yes. I can see these arms, I can see these hands, I can see the whole scene here, but here there is just a space for everything which is occurring.
So, Chris, am I speaking the truth when I say that we're really built for, if I may call it loving, we are built from that way, if we tell the truth. Is that right?
Yes, and it frightens me. Frightens the hell out of me.
Why? Why?
One of the things that happens with this, I'm finding, and I'm only slowly experiencing this or letting myself into it, but there is a tendency to want to just embrace almost everybody you meet. And Douglas, I have this awful temptation now. And that's something which you have to get used to. I'm still adjusting to it. My wife wouldn't be very happy with quite a lot of the people I would like to embrace. And so there is that element of it, that it is so, you are so empty for what is occurring, that it is, there's just no distance, there's no space, there's no separation. And it's not the mystical experience at all. It's just the truth. It's just the way we are.
Wonderful, thank you, Chris. So I would say, let's tell the truth and give love a chance. Tell the truth and give love a chance. And I say the world is really a beautiful world, designed to a fantastically beautiful specification, in which love is the bottom line. Because every one of us is built open for the rest, you know. In the real world, love not only has a chance, love is what it's all about. And what by love, I'm not talking about sentimentality and the gushing sentimentality stuff. I'm saying let's live from the truth and see that we're actually built that way. And the feelings will come if we tell the truth about what we see. Seeing first, loving afterwards. Dante, great Italian poet in the Divine Comedy, which most of you will know, in part anyway, says, blessedness comes through vision, seeing, not from loving, which comes later. Let us tell the truth about what we see, and the love will come up, and we'll be given a chance. So I would say this is the second fruit we could reasonably expect from living, from who we really, really, really are. But you see, we have to practice it. And I would say that this practice is meditation. It's meditation for ordinary life. Meditation for the marketplace. It's meditation when you go away from here and tell the truth in your car. Because the one who you really, 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 really are, I think you will find never moved one inch. I mean, if your space were a world to happen in, space doesn't rush about Melbourne. You get in your car and you tell the truth and you have fun. Because this kind of meditation is fun. That's why you go on with it. The other kind, you know, we're apt to give up because it's so bloody dull. But this is really meditation, which I'd say really fun. And you get in your car. You get in your car and tell the truth. Well, I've come all the way down by car from Brisbane, you know, and we're going by car presently down to Adelaide. And, you know, a lot of nonsense, never moved an inch. Australia did all the moving. It's marvelous. Australia dances. You see, and when you were very, very little, you told the truth. And you looked in the car, your dad took you for a drive in the car, and you just watched those telegraph poles going by, and the trees going by, and the houses turning, and the cattle rushing about in the field, and the kangaroos getting up to I don't know what. And you saw all this happening when you were very, very little. You told the truth. Australia danced. Then what happened? That was the as-is world. Then the as-if world took over. Australia sadly ground to a halt. It ground to a halt. Now, where did all that commotion go? Where did it go? You know, for me, it went in here, and I lost my inner peace, I lost my tranquility. I became commotion. I really lost my peace. Now, when I get in the car, I give back the motion to the world. I regain my tranquility that were never really lost. And Australia dances. And that's so beautiful. And it's such fun. Practicing this is fun. And I say it is practical in every which way. Because whatever I do from hallucinating a thing here is badly done, comparatively. If I'm writing a book or washing the dishes or pretending to clean the house, which I rarely do, but if I'm whatever I'm doing it from who I really, really am here, from the space, it is better done, and I would say done, a certain amount of pleasure. If you're doing it from this place, is to be do a better job and to enjoy it much more. And to do anything I do from the hallucinated meatball here spoils the work. Put it another way. For me, the bottom line is not just seeing who I am here, but trusting it. At the end of the day, it's a matter of trust, surrender to who I really, really, really am. You know, that little guy in the mirror has no resources. Little Douglas there, he's thin, you see, he's thin little guy. He's got no resources, no substance, that little guy in the mirror, Douglas. I put my money on him, and my God, I've lost out on my life. I really have, and we do, you know, we put our money on that little thing. The ego constellates about that picture. Put my money on him, and he will always, always let me down. You know, if I came in and talked to you from him, I would be desperately miserable and boring for all of us. The only way to do a job fairly well, or at least as well as we are able to do it, is from who we really, really, really are. This backing that we have is infinite. Douglas will always let me down. The one I am here, the transparency that goes on and on forever, is a well that never runs dry, never lets me down. It doesn't give me what I want. It gives me what I need. And I say, don't believe a word of it. Test it. Test it. I can only swear to you in my 82 years of desperate failure and neglect to look at this, followed by some faithfulness to it in later years, I can only say that this is what it's all about for me, is trusting who I really, really, really am. And giving up trying to trust little Douglas in a mirror. So the bottom line for me is trusting. How do we keep this up? How do we keep this up? I don't know how you will keep it up. I don't know how many of you want to keep it up. I would say that it's consistent, it should be consistent with whatever you find helpful, whatever meditation or therapy or spiritual practice you have. Surely, if this is valid, it should be consistent with that. If you want to keep this up, how do you do it? What are the methods of doing it? Well, I'll give you one or two more tips, perhaps, about, what shall I say, keeping this experience, this vision of who we really, really, really are, green in our experience, coming back to it and back to it till it's natural in the end, to be natural. Because this is what this evening is about. It's about simply about being natural, isn't it? Not being phony. It's all it is, really. Just about being natural. Well, how do we keep it up? Well, I can tell you one or two things that I find helpful. Well, first of all, having some problems is very helpful. No, I wouldn't say desperately severe problem, but having quite severe problem brings me back to the place where there's no problem. Because who I really, really, really am is problem-free. Really. And I'm living from the problem-free area out into the world where Douglas is all problems. He runs on problems. And the world runs on problems. Having problems there brings me back to the place where there are no problems. So having problems is a good thing, up to a point, provided you let them bring you back to the problem-free, stress-free region. Things are stressed. The world runs on stress like cars run on petrol. Everything is stressed. I suggest who you really, really, really are is stress-free because there's nothing there to be stressed. No thing. Not nothing. No thing. It's awake, immense transparency. It's no thing and unstressable. Problems help. But there's one thing I find very refreshing and helpful. That is to hang around people who are on this wavelength. I hang around Chris, Carol, and various other friends that, you know, I've acquired on this visit to Australia. You know, they refresh me and help me to remain clear. So I say, seeing who you really, really are is like measles, catching, really is catching. Isn't it, Chris? It's really catching. So stay around people on this wavelength. You say, well, I don't think I know anybody on this wavelength. All right, show them. You know, you could go away from here and show a dozen people tonight. Chris tells me he came back on a plane from Adelaide and kind of almost by accident shared this with his friend next door to him. And it's eminently shareable. It's the only thing you can share with people. I mean, if I tried to share with you my appreciation of Mozart or my delight in the fantastic colours of Australian flowers, I mean, your red might be my blue. And Mozart? Well, I mean, how could I explain what I feel about Mozart? Or any other ideas, almost incommunicable. But when you see who you really, really, really are, and you share it with someone by means of these experiments or others, then you really, you experience the barriers are down. They're really down. And you can go away from here and show people. So I would ask you to do that for me. Would you do that, please? The world needs this recipe for love, doesn't it? Telling it like it is, living in the world where love has a chance. We need this. Practicing this is fun, refreshing, efficient. It works. Don't believe a thing Douglas says. Test it. You are the authority. You are the authority on you. If you find something quite different where you are, I respect that. I'm not talking about the way to who you really, really are. I'm talking about a way. It's a very, very good, demythologized, up-to-date, efficient way of coming home to the place you never left. But it's only one way of many. It's not the way. Is a bloody good way.